from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Money Memories. I'm your host, Alona. Are you a freelancer or a professional in the creative field? If so, do money planning conversations sometimes not capture how you work? In this week's episode, I talked to Boston-based violinist Celia Zhang. Celia has built an illustrious career as both a performer and educator, having graduated with a bachelor's degree in violin performance from the Juilliard School and subsequently receiving her master's degree from the Yale School of Music in 2016. Celia's parents immigrated to the U.S. from China, and she talks about how they were able to budget and plan so that she and her siblings were able to freely pursue the extracurricular activities that they wanted. She also talks about financial planning as a small business owner and the time that she filmed a Nike commercial with Kyrie Irving. Let's jump in. Great. Well, good evening, Celia. Welcome to Money Memories. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's great to catch up with you. So can you tell us what it is that you do for a living?
So I'm a violinist, and essentially I used to do a lot of gigs and performance and orchestra and so on. But as I've been growing, I've been doing more and more towards the teaching side. And now I run a pretty full violin music studio here in Boston. And so it's super fun. Kids are really cute. Yeah, it's lots of fun.
What ages do you teach?
It's a big variety. So there are some adults, but most kids are between like 4 and 16-ish. So it's a good variety. There's a lot of levels and variants. So yeah, lots of fun.
It's awesome. And where did you go to school, or where did you study music?
So I did my pre-college training, which is kind of like essentially pre-college, like during the high school years and stuff, in Cincinnati, at the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, where they had like a Starling program. It's a very long name. But then my degrees are from the Juilliard School for College and at Yale School of Music for my master's.
Awesome.
So in violin performance. Yep.
Ah, that's incredible. At what age did you realize you wanted to become a musician?
So I said that I wanted to be a violinist when I was like 10, and my parents were like, sure, that's cute, you know? And then I kept saying it, and then they were like, she's not changing. Why isn't she changing? So basically since I was 10, but like seriously, actually diligently studying and everything, probably like 13 and onwards.
For people who don't know, well, our listeners don't know, but I remember, so you, I went to high school, I grew up with your older sister, and I remember playing in youth orchestras, and
I remember you in the youth orchestra.
And you were just always the most like kick-ass like violinist, even though you were so much younger. It was really amazing to see. So
thank you.
it's really like, I'm not at all surprised that you've been so successful, but at the same time, it's I remember you were so little. Now you're here.
I used to like black out, and not really black out, but I was just like, I have to play well. So like, I don't remember much of the social aspect. I was just like, I gotta play the notes.
Wow.
But that was pretty fun.
Oh man, that's amazing. So you mentioned you knew from a really young age you wanted to be a violinist. What kind of environment did you grow up in? Did your siblings play instruments? You know, kind of describe the household that you're raised in.
Yeah, so my sister Lucy, she actually started first, and apparently she wanted piano. My parents were like, no, we're not getting a piano, it's too big, our house is small, we're gonna move, blah blah blah. Get a violin, it's way more portable. And so she's like, fine, she did the violin. And then I saw her playing for like a year or two first, because I was still too small. And then I was just like copying her. I had like my own violin that was her old violin that I like carried around to lessons, her lessons. And I like banged around, broke them up and stuff. And then, yeah, started when I was about 5. And she took violin for like 10 years. My younger sister also took violin. And then we both did piano for a while. So we all did music. But it was something that my parents thought would be really helpful for our education and like discipline and stuff. So that's how that happened.
Very musical household. Did you guys ever perform trios?
We tried for like a Christmas recital or something at one of our previous teachers' yearly performance things. And it was cute. Didn't happen very often. We would like, usually someone, like my sister, would just like wander off and be like, ah. And then Lucy and I would just be like, okay, come on, come on. It was lots of fun, but it was kind of staggered age-wise, so.
That makes sense. That's hilarious. I can totally imagine that. So with that context in mind, what's your earliest or most impactful money memory?
So I would say for context, my parents grew up during the Cultural Revolution in China. So like back then, everything was very limited. Like everything was rationed. Even if you had the money to buy something, you couldn't. So they grew up in the mentality of being very cost effective and like saving what you could in case of a rainy day and so on. So when they were raising us, they showed us like these kinds of methods, like, you know, like the sales section, wonderful section, you know, Costco, amazing, but, you know, like all these practical things. But I think the thing that stuck out to us the most was because, you know, violin is not a cheap activity. My sister's fencing career was not a cheap activity, but like they were so like well allocating with where they spent their funds that even though that they were maybe like, we had like hand-me-down clothes or like these little things, but like they were totally able to then help us to like grow educationally and developmentally in our extracurriculars by reallocating things. So I think it was like learning to spend where you value things was a big lesson.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like a very impactful, and especially when you talk about having a career as like a performer or an artist where
right.
you're not necessarily receiving like a biweekly paycheck with how did you kind of come into your personal financial management journey as an artist, as a creative?
So to be honest, I literally, like, even though like the school they went to were great and all that stuff, like I did feel from an earlier age that like it is not your standard 9-to-5. Like the most standard 9-to-5 aspect of musician life would probably be an orchestral position, but most people freelance and like have some like hodgepodge hybrid of different things. So like from a younger age, I kind of just assumed that I wouldn't be making that much. And so then like whatever I did spend, I should like spend very thoughtfully or like really on the essentials and like save for rainy day like my parents had done. So that was a big factor in how I started developing financial habits. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious because I didn't experience this myself, but, you know, going to Juilliard and having gone to Yale, is personal finance like taught or discussed in addition to, you know, performance, or like, how do you learn about it?
I can tell they were definitely trying to incorporate these elements into our education. Like at Juilliard, we had this thing called lunch and learns where like you were supposed to get certain credits, not school credits, but like residence hall credits for something. I forget what, but to get them, you went to workshops and seminars during lunchtime called Lunch and Learns, where someone would come, you would eat pizza, and they would talk about like how to get a manager or how to deal with taxes or like a few things like that. But it was definitely peripheral because the center was on like, go practice for your juries, go take your exams and stuff like that. So they did definitely try, and they had like, they did repeatedly tell us like, if you have questions, talk to like the career services department or all the other aspects. So they were there. We probably didn't pay enough attention to it. So that was probably like on us. But I do think it would have been helpful if they also added like a financial course or some sort of elective as a regular thing for musicians to work with. So
for yeah. sure. So it was kind of a combination of like some formal elements, but also things you piece together just as you go along, sounds like.
Yeah. I think, to be fair to the school, I think a lot of the students weren't worried so much about that. They were just like, I'll just get this orchestral job. That's amazing. And I want to deal with it. But realistically, like, I think students could have reached out a little bit more mm-hmm. to like ask, or even like the internet. The internet is amazing. So much is on the internet now. It's where I learned most of it. So,
yeah. So like, what are some financial resources that you utilize in your, you know, along?
Part of it was just like as needs came up, like how to do my own taxes and how to like make an LLC and stuff, I like had to Google that straight, like. But some of it also was sites like The Financial Diet, where I read up a lot about like how other freelancers, not necessarily musicians, but like writers or like actors or dancers, whoever were doing other things, but how they made their freelance income work as a lifestyle sustainably. And that was, I think, a breakthrough for me, because I used to just assume growing up that, like, you know, I'm a musician, it's going to be a whole different struggle and no one else can relate to this because it's just me. I like thought that way for a long time. But once I found sites like that, then I think that was a really big breakthrough for me and a relief. A huge relief.
Yeah. I can totally. Yeah. I can imagine. What's like the worst financial decision that you've made?
So I'm lucky that like, since I expected myself to make very little, I didn't let myself have any huge like regrets or anything. I think just learning earlier, like, why didn't I take that economics course in high school? Like, long-term probably wasn't a big deal as much, but it could have helped my stress levels for a few years. Yeah, I think that's probably my biggest financial regret, even though it's not actually a spending thing.
Yeah, for sure. And then you mentioned that you started your career kind of in performance, and now you've pivoted more towards teaching. And so as part of that, you've become like a small business owner. What's been the most surprising or unexpected part of being a small business owner for you?
I'm not sure if this is just because of my field being a music teacher, but I really enjoyed messing with my own schedule. Not messing with, like having control over my own schedule and not having to like report to someone else. And it actually got me more excited about researching like money things and legal things and so on, doing it for myself, than it would have if I had done this for like a different music school or like also had an admin role somewhere or something. So I think that was something that was really exciting. And just like overall watching my numbers grow up, watching my roster change over time, I think that was just very satisfying to be like, oh, this is like actually like helping people and people are actually like wanting to service and finding it useful. So yeah, and making something out of it.
Yeah. And how do you handle like marketing and getting new students? I imagine it's a little bit different. I imagine it probably relies on word of mouth, but you know, how do you do it?
So I think the main thing for me was like after grad school, I moved to Boston with essentially an idea, but not really with many contacts. So because of that, I initially started my website thinking that it would be a good way to like at least gain legitimacy. If like, even if site traffic wasn't growing, at least people who did search for me would like to find something about me rather than just like piecing together from other sources. And then one thing that helped, I think, was when I first started, I worked for different music schools that were local around here and helped to establish like my teaching reputation and my name in different music networks around town. And then once I got those pretty well established and I had more experience, then I could switch more to my own personal home studio, which is what I'm doing now. And I think that helped me gain a lot of legitimacy. And then once I've had students, then like if they enjoyed it, they told their cousins or their parents or their friends or whoever. And so it was a lot of word of mouth. So I think the website and just word of mouth essentially were really helpful.
Definitely. And how has COVID changed the way that you instruct and interact with your...
Mostly now they're all virtual. Because of COVID, I don't currently teach in person, but all of my students are remote and most of them have actually adapted quite well. The main occasional glitch would just be like internet connection, which is just is what it is. And then just like, there are maybe a couple students who are like very, very, very young, like 4-year-olds who like the first time they have a violin lesson, it's obviously going to be weird. So like having their parents in the room to help is a huge benefit. But yeah, most of it, I think the older students especially are responding pretty well and they're in the routine by now and their practice is still pretty consistent and they practice as they should. So overall, it's been relatively smooth, which is really, really lucky because I feel like it could have been a lot worse.
I can't imagine. When you said 4-year-olds, I just remember like how awful I must have sounded when I was first learning, like in person, and then add that with like the digital sound effect of things. I really hope you got like a nice bonus or something.
Honestly, since I'm like over here, it was more jarring for the parent who was live in the room and then didn't know how to actually move things on the instrument. So I think the parents probably had a much more challenging job than I did.
That's a good point, because when you're not in person, you can't be there to correct like how they're holding their clothes.
So you gotta can't physically off. Move their fingertip an inch over, like, and it's like, oh, move left. Which way is left? Move clockwise. Which way is clockwise? So it's a lot of funny stuff that happens.
I hadn't even imagined that, but that's such a good point. Well, before I let you go, I can't just let you go without mentioning like
a career highlight for you. And you probably are like, this is not even a career high. It's just whatever. But you were in a commercial with Kyrie Irving for, was it a Nike ad?
It was for Nike. It was very weird that it happened, but it did. So they had a casting call, or they sent out a, whatever it's called, the call announcement thingy. They wanted some kind of a fake orchestra in the shoe commercial that he was advertising or promoting. And so I was one of the musicians that in the background, they like had us like playing stuff, but muted us and then like dubbed over natural recording. So it's not our playing, but it was our visual. And the interesting thing was, it was just so like, it was tons of fun. It was very like adrenaline-y because I'd never done that before and all that stuff. It was during Thanksgiving season in an airplane hangar, so it was really cold. And so that was just really funny because, like, for me, I think most musicians, but like, when it's that cold and you're trying to play, your muscles just like start spazzing. So I was just like, thank God they're not using our audio for this, because it would have been so like twitchy. But we did do that, and it was lots of fun. And yeah, we'd have to look very serious with Kyrie like pointing at us at like once or twice. It was really fun. So
how long did it take to shoot that?
I think they booked us for like, I want to say 4 hours. I don't remember anymore, but I feel like it was like 6 to 9 p.m. I mean, 6 to 10 p.m. or something like that. So yeah, it was evening in winter. But it was fun. But it was fun. And they had really effective heat lamps in certain areas. So when we weren't shooting, we were huddled over there.
Yeah. It's hilarious. And the ad itself, I rewatched it recently. It's only like 3 minutes or something. So,
oh, it's like 30 seconds. It's like, it's really, like, I think there's two versions. There's a short one, 30 seconds, and there's a long one that's 1 minute. But they do have us do the same thing over and over and over several times. So it's probably how they ended up with that much content.
Wow.
But it's tons of fun.
Well, before I let you go, Celia, if people are interested in connecting with you, learning about your repertoire, or taking lessons with you, where can they go find you?
So my website is celiazangviolin.com. So
it's
pretty straightforward.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time and your money memories with us. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning in. As always, I'm your host, Ilona. If you like what you heard, please be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. For more episodes, check out moneymemoriespodcast.com or listen to the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. Interested in being featured on the show? Head to the website and submit a note or DM me on Twitter @IlonaOnTheMoney. See you next week.